So no, I can, no, hey, no. Ooh, look, I have video.
No, no, you don't. I hit the wrong damn button.
I saw Jay's forehead.
You saw, yeah, I know, you saw my forehead. Did that really work?
Yeah. That's, yeah, I saw the video.
No, I wandered into the kitchen because I very specifically saved tonight as the night I don't work out.
Ah.
So I'm going to have a giant glass of rum and Coke.
Nice.
Oh, light rum or dark rum?
What kind of rum you got?
It's a local distillery called Bowman Brothers. They have a line of bourbon that is very good and a line of dark Caribbean rum that is really good. Like, I almost feel bad about mixing it because it's that good. But I think I mentioned that it's that good, so it makes really, really yummy rum and Cokes. And, of course, I mean rum and Diet Coke. But
right.
It's really good. I've been... We're not recording, right? Because
I am recording. I told you I was recording.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. I won't tell you how I got my rum.
Did you smuggle it?
No, I didn't smuggle it.
Well then,
it was an office grab.
Oh, okay.
Which is, you know, really humorous when you consider my office.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that looks just okay. Anyway, so in about 20 minutes. Probably cut off my mic because I'll be slurring. Anyway.
That'll be awesome. So you were saying two things that drove you crazy.
Oh, the two things that drive me nuts, and they're really esoteric, and a lot of people are gonna be like, huh? Are decimate.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It's used wrong.
Yep.
Decimate does not mean to defeat soundly. It does not mean to utterly destroy. It does not mean any of those things. It means very specifically to reduce by one tenth. Period.
Right.
It's not used that way, however. It is used completely wrong most of the time. Oh, they decimated that group. No, no, they didn't, because they did not reduce it by one tenth. They reduced it by 70%. That would be undecimate. No, actually be heptadecimate? Anyway. The other one, and this one's even more of an uphill battle. Mayhem. Mayhem is not chaos. Mayhem is not bad things. Mayhem is very specifically the act of removing limbs.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, very few people actually know that. And it's one of those words that's actually like, it's actually changing. The crime of maliciously injuring or maiming someone originally so as to render the victim defenseless, like literally cutting off a hand or an arm or a leg. The King Arthur committed mayhem on the Black Knight. There. That's so Monty Python. I figured, you know, in honor of our British guest Hayden. I also love my teeth. Oh, I'm sorry, that was bad.
Hello. Well, if we're going to go with chopping people's arms and legs off, let me do the introduction. This is the Broadsword calling Danny Boy. This is Broadsword calling Danny Boy.
Awesome.
Oh my goodness. So I'm very, very happy that you've joined us this week, Hayden, because perhaps you can help us make sense of why anyone should give a crap about the royal wedding.
Oh.
Well, actually Jay brings up a good point. There's actually several vectors to consider. About the royal wedding. The first is the royals in general. The second is the spectacle of the wedding itself. And we figured who better than Hayden to help us clear this up.
Exactly. Little known fact, Squirrel Report listeners, Hayden is actually part of the royal family. He's one of the cousins.
Well, I'm going to get into so much trouble. They're going to take away my passport. They're not going to let me drink tea ever again.
Well, Hayden, you know what we do with tea, so.
Well, right.
Let me get in character. We dump it in the harbor.
Harbor.
We put it on ice and drink it on hot days.
And put lots of sugar in it.
That's right.
I went from a land where we dump it in the harbor to they put 8 pounds of sugar per 8 ounce drink. So.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen
that. So that's light tea.
That's light. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Real honest to goodness, Southern sweet tea comes with a picture of Wilford Brimley to follow you around going, diabetes. So.
Right. Well, so since you had, you know, a definition of words, let's do some from the royal family. So, if you're a monarchist, if you announce that you are a monarchist, that means that you support the king and the queen and, you know, their immediate family. If you're a royalist, you support the whole royal family, including past kings and queens.
I did not know there was a distinction.
Same here. Even like the weird kings, like George II.
Yes.
George III, because, you know, he was the one upon whose watch they lost the colonies. Like, oh crap, we lost the colonies. Damn it, George. What about George II? Now, were they sequential, or is it like popes, where you might have like several millennia between, you know, Pope Philomena the First and Philomena the Second?
No, you're going to have several millennia. I mean, take George, Kate's little boy. I mean, there hasn't been a George for a while, so he would be technically George the Sixth.
Would he have to be the king in order to be George the Sixth, or is he George the Sixth just because he's named George and he's in the line of succession?
He's George the Sixth because he's in line for the succession, and he's the sixth George. So, okay. And there's been, you know, several hundred years and a change of a millennium since there was a last, George. So yes, it does skip, and it does, you know, it bounces around, but they seem to have a very sort of small pool of names to choose from, a bit like you know, their DNA. But
wow.
So yes, you get Louise, you know, you get George, Edward, yeah, you know, and
Henry.
You know, you don't get many sort of, you know, Tibetiuses or, you know, there's never going to be a Hayden.
Hayden the First. I love that.
Yes. Yes.
Can we vote for you to be King Hayden?
Yes, you could. Absolutely. I can go to Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park and stand on my soapbox, and you can all crowd around going,
Hayden 2020. That's what we're aiming for.
That's what we're aiming for. I like that idea already.
So, you know, one thing I've always thought odd, and maybe it's because I've, you know, I'm American and not, you know, British or any other country that has royalty, but you know, if you study the, you know, royalty, you notice they sort of move around from like country to country, and if you lack a sufficient nobility in your country, you can like import some. and everybody seems to be okay with that.
Yes. Yes, I think that's... I mean, if you're not a royalist or you're not a monarchist, it's one thing that I think people, particularly in America, can sort of understand and in some ways, you know, appreciate. I mean, take Meghan, you know, for example, the Duchess of Sussex. You know, she's an American.
Right.
Yes. You know, they've imported by, you know, through love and affection.
Sure.
And but at the same time, yes, so the current queen, her name, and the, you know, current, royal family were from Germany, and their original surname was Battenberg.
Right.
But there was a war going on, the Great War, the First World War.
Yes.
And they decided that really, having this sort of Germanic sounding as the royal family was not, you know, was not quite the game of cricket that they thought it, you know, it might be. So, yes, they changed it to Windsor.
I knew that, but I think it's interesting that, and you know, obviously the Queen doesn't really have much of a role in the government anymore. But still, I mean, it's like, it is as if we took, you know, an immigrant from Guatemala and made them the president of the United States. Sort of.
We've had worse. Yeah. We've had a Kenyan.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you see where I'm going. I mean, it just seems odd that the people of England and Britain and the United Kingdom would let themselves be putatively ruled, you know, even in ceremonial. I mean, they aren't, you know, the Queen. I don't know what the Queen doesn't have a whole lot to do with the government, so it's not like, you know, she's in charge or anything, but. You know, it just seems odd that, I mean, I can understand, you know, there's, you know, a tradition of royalty and, you know, you have all the what are the dukes and earls and whatnot. But, it just seems, I don't know, a little quaint to have, you know, an actual king or queen that you actually pay out of the, you know, from the taxpayers' money. I mean, I know they have wealth of their own, but, you know, it was wealth that came from being like the king. It wasn't, and being the government. It's not like they said, oh, you know, all this money we've collected from, you know, taxes for all these millennia when we were the government, we're just going to hold on to that. And, you know, it's a peculiar thing.
Okay.
I don't know where you stand on the whole, you know, monarchy thing, Hayden. We've never discussed it, so I don't know.
I'm not really. I'll be truthful. I'm not really a monarchist. My mother and father are not really, you know, are not certainly not really royalists. But at the same time. When I've been outside of England, people, you know, ask me, you know, very similar questions to what you're asking me. And I find myself sort of saying nice things about them.
That's
I certainly don't, you know.
Because you're British. You always, I mean, what would you do? even if you hated them, you'd say nice things about them.
Well, that's true. You made two points, and I think it speaks for the British people that we don't necessarily object to someone from, you know, another country, you know, becoming part of you know, being part of the royal family and subsequently then governing us. I think people, part of it, because I think a lot of people feel that it's, you know, the king and the queen are chosen by God, which is the main sort of thing that the people that are not royalists, that's the one thing that they really don't, you know, they really, you know, oh, I'm, you know, I'm not a, you know, I don't believe, you know, how can it be chosen by God sort of thing. So, so there's a little bit of that, you know, but it does speak to the British character that we don't mind, you know, a foreigner coming in. I mean, even going all the way back to, you know, William, you know, William the First, who defeated Harold on the, right, you know, on the Battle of Bosworth.
Basically, there's a very moved famous, in and invaded.
Yeah, moved in and invaded. You know, Harold, arrow in the eye, you know, ooh, what's that thing coming at me? Bayer, Bayer tapestry. And
it's so, coming right for us. Kill it.
Coming right for you, yeah. So, so it's, yeah, it's, we just, we don't mind. And I think it does speak, I think it speaks to the British character. I think it's a, I think it's a really nice thing about, you know, about the British character. Now, sorry, what was your second point? I've lost my train of thought.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh,
we weren't paying attention.
Yeah, we weren't paying attention either. Well, it's just, it is, interestingly, one of the last monarch, one of the last countries in the world that actually has a queen and, you know, supposedly eventually a king again, that is technically officially part of the government.
Yes. You, I mean, the queen is, and I just remembered what your point, what your question was, and my point is the queen is, you know, is essentially the shadow government. You know, people in America have been saying, oh, there's a shadow government, or, you know, a dark, you know, a dark thing.
Yes.
But the queen is, I mean, she can choose the prime minister. I don't think there'd be many circumstances where the British public would choose a prime minister. The prime minister, newly elected prime minister, would then present herself to the Queen, and then the Queen would say, "Bugger off." No, but at the same time, you know, technically she could. What she does do is, the Queen, you know, sells a lot of tanks. She sells a massive amount of Harrier jump jets and Tornado and Typhoon fighter jets.
So she's an arms dealer.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And job. She's one of the biggest. And I'm not making that up. I'm not sort of funny joke. What she does, yes. She sells a lot of British industry, and the majority of that British industry is our, you know, fighting, you know, equipment.
Interesting. I was not aware of that.
Especially because you can't own any of it. like not even like bayonets, because they're knives. And, you know, I mean, even like the sporks are probably like, they, you probably have to like sheet them. Somebody was telling me they saw a note in Britain. No, there was an item in a store that sold kitchen goods, and this item had not to be sold to anyone under the age of 18. Take a guess what it was.
I know they do that with silverware.
A garden rake.
A whisk.
What?
Yeah, a whisk. You know, like you make scrambled eggs with, because apparently, I don't know. I can't even imagine what you could do with a whisk. It's not even like, okay, like a meat tenderizer is kind of like a hammer. You could theoretically bash someone's skull in with it. Not that I've ever thought about that, but
like that'd a whisk a lot would of just bashing, because there's not a lot of mass in a whisk.
Yeah, I mean, you'd pester them. It'd be like trying to beat someone to death with a wiffle ball bat. You know, you just annoy them. You're like, bop, 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 whap, 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 whap. Stop it. Whap, 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 whap. Oh, come on, knock it off. Whap, 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 whap. It's just go away. I
well, can't.
wrap my mind around how, I mean, is this a thing? Are people weaponizing kitchenware in England? Is there some sort of like, you know, tactical spatula? They've got like an edge sharpened. It's like a throwing spatula, like the Spetsnaz shovel.
No, the British police.
I view Julia Child in a completely different light now. That woman was one step away from being like Julia the Ripper. That's the only thing I can think of. Maybe that was it. Maybe Jack the Ripper was a misunderstood cook. He wasn't really killing people. He was trying to make them dinner, and owing to the nature of deadly British cutlery, boom. It also would explain the unfair reputation that British food has of not being the most appetizing. Because every time they try to prepare a meal, 48 people die.
Jay's on a roll.
Oh, wow.
Whipped out a whisk, the entire room was dead.
I'll let you know. Look, not less than 3 hours ago, I had some delicious British food.
Was it a roast? Please tell me it was a roast.
How many people? Yes,
it was. It was a roast and a Yorkshire pudding.
Awesome.
Lashings and gravy.
It was not Bubble and Squeak. That's like it the one button. And that's, I don't know what it is. It's got something to do with sausage and peppers?
Cabbage. So
cabbage. I knew it was something green. Sorry.
Yeah. So as you stick your fork in, because it sort of rubs against the cooked cabbage, the boiled cabbage, it can sort of squeak as the cabbage sort of rubs together, a bit like, I don't know.
Nice.
Something. Yes.
Interesting. The learning has occurred this evening.
Indeed. So why do you think, Jay, legitimately, why do you think that the British police are governing whisks? I mean, why do you think?
Oh, all joking aside, I'm sure that it's one of those one size fits all things that it was, they were told to put these stickers on, you know, anything in this section. And somebody just took the stickers and just went, done.
Yeah.
Not entering into their head that they mean the knives. You know, there was probably like a display of kitchen knives in E7. And somebody said, yeah, go put these stickers on everything in E6. And they were just, you know, somebody just, well, okay, they told me to put stickers on everything in E6. Flip, 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 flip. And, you know, the horrors of the British Whisk 09 tales were curtailed that evening.
Indeed. And
Arian Egg remained unbeaten.
Arian Egg remained unbeaten. Of course, Constable, he ran into the door. there's another element to it, is that the British police are now just so crippled by political correctness, is that they are fighting thought crime on Facebook. Oof. While, you know, burglaries and things like that are that takes policing, and there could be there could be an Asian or a Muslim who's been the perpetrator, and then there's all sorts of, you know, paperwork. Did they handle the interrogation correctly? Did they handle the arrest correctly? You know, did he put down his bacon sandwich before he read him his rights? You know, all those sort of things. So now, seeing if someone's got a pair of secateurs, in down the bottom of their garden, is just so much easier for them. And that's the reason why you're seeing these laughable, I mean, the whisk was probably a, like you say, some, 15-year-old kid,
Right.
Not right. But at the same time, you hear, all sorts of, you said someone had a smelly bottom on Facebook, and they had their feelings you know, hurt, therefore, and you're starting to see legitimate things on that, because we're a very small island. I mean, legitimately, we are a small island, and we have a lot of very good technology. So, you know, it's not hard for the, you know, and a budget. Obviously, we're affluent. We're an affluent country. We're an affluent country that's small and has a lot of, you know, technology develop, you know, in-house technology development. So it's easy for the police to be, you know, Twitter and, you know, the policing that Google Insta tweet faces.
Tweet faces. And that also does not require them to be face-to-face confronting people.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It allows them to very safely from however many miles away or kilometers or no, you folks, you still use
miles. Yes. Yeah.
And instead of pounds or kilograms, it's stone, right? Something like that. Or
yes.
Hogshead for volume.
Car gets
like so many kilometers per liter of kerosene or something like that.
Yes. We drive in miles. Our distances are measured in miles. We buy our petrol in liters, and I filled up my car the other day and I paid $27 a gallon.
Oh yeah, because they charge by the liter, which 1 liter is like a quart. Yeah. Oh, it's four pounds a liter, and that sounds a little high. And then you realize that no, that's more like 16 pounds, which is $28.
Yeah, I was doing the arithmetic because I knew I'd be on this on. You know,
there would be math.
So I thought, ooh, I can have a little conversational bon mot. So I did the arithmetic.
Alan, how much would it cost you to fill your truck up?
You know, I was just thinking about that. Let me see. Convert gallons to liters.
You've got about a 7 million kiloliter gas tank, don't you?
It is a 35 gallon gas tank.
Oh, my word. So that's roughly 140 liters at
27 dollars a gallon.
$27 a gallon, yeah. You'd be putting in, you know, 35 gallons. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's 132 and a half liters times 4 pounds. You said it was 4 pounds a liter?
No.
I was just making shit up.
Yeah. So it's 27 dollars
a gallon times 35 gallons.
Oh.
$945 to fill your truck
good
up for me.
Good Lord.
Now do you understand why they drive cars the size of like toasters?
So how much of that is like taxes and stuff?
About 90%.
Yeah. See, there's the problem.
And yes. All of a sudden, the Reliant Robin makes more sense now.
Are electric cars becoming a big deal in England yet?
They are indeed. I mean, my car is a Peugeot. It's a turbo diesel, and it's a 1.9 liter engine, and it's actually quite a fair size. A couple of weeks ago, I was walking around Lowe's in Ohio, and I spotted a lawnmower, a ride-on lawnmower that had a bigger engine.
I'm not surprised. Now
you'll have to forgive me, Hayden, because for a brief moment, I'm not up on what the latest Peugeots look like, but they're, you know, vaguely European. That I just got the mental image of one with a gigantic diesel smokestack like you see in pickup trucks in Texas, and you tooling around England with just a giant black cloud of smoke coming out of the Peugeot because you're rolling coal.
No. Is that a thing in England? Do people tune up their little cars so that they blow black smoke everywhere like they do here? It drives me nuts.
No.
Trucks. And yeah, like,
because it's too expensive.
We've got the little Japanese cars that sound like ultralight airplanes. And then you've got the diesel trucks that, like, they think they're driving a locomotive. It looks like something got to get smart. Engage smoke screen. They call it rolling coal. I'm like, I call it looking like an idiot. But
I've often wondered if theoretically, if you know, when they have all those, you know, the jeeps and the you know the trucks with the, like exactly like you described. On occasion, I've gone into Buffalo Wild Wings, which is a chain of things that sell hot wings, right? Okay,
sports and bar.
A sports bar, perfect. And I've often wondered that if I walk in, there's nowhere to sit. I just walk in and shout in a very loud voice, "Chad, you've left your lights on your Jeep." The tables will clear and I can sit down.
Now there are regional variants. For example, if you were in Massachusetts, you'd have to walk in and say, "Hey, Sully, you left your lights on, you chowed ahead." Guaranteed. Three guys would get up. Oh. Let's see. If you were in, you know, let's say the Upper Peninsula, it'd have to be, what, Olaf? I don't know. Come on, Alan, throw in a Texas one.
Oh.
Tex, duh. Tex, you left the lights on in your F-7850. It's a truck so tall, you need an elevator. I really did think I'd seen like a lot of jacked up trucks when I moved to Virginia, but oh my God, it doesn't even hold a candle to Texas. I posted that picture on Facebook. I thought, oh my God, this is the most ridiculous truck I've ever seen in my life. I put it on Facebook in Texas. Texas people are like, "Oh, that's a baby one. Jay, yeah. That's adorable."
Yeah.
They get worse?
Yeah, go into any you know, it's funny. You'd think like construction workers and stuff would have trucks like that, but in general they don't, because they're either driving shitty little Econoboxes or the company truck. But right. If you go to any place where they make a little bit of money, like go to a chemical plant or something like that, where you know, they're a bunch of rednecks, but they're paid pretty well, and you see all kinds of weird jacked up shit. I mean, it's crazy. And a lot of them, you know, I'd probably say, a good 75% of them, the big reason they own a four-wheel drive is to get their boat in and out of the boat ramp.
Oh my gosh.
They're not actually driving that off-road. It's for the boat ramp.
Oh God. We are that way with Jeeps here. The Jeep Wrangler, particularly the four-door variant, is got to be one of the most common vehicles in that I've seen in Northern Virginia. And they have a mind-boggling array of accessories available. I mean, there's the little snorkel that comes up out of the engine, you know, in case you're ever fording a river that comes up over the body.
Which is funny, because there's probably not even a dirt road anywhere near there.
Yeah. There's the ridiculous jack that's like 15 feet long and it's made out of I-beams and could lift up an 18-wheeler that's strapped to the hood. Or there's a, you know, comically oversized spare tire hanging off the back that could easily be in the, you know, Paris Dakar rally. And the one thing I don't see in any of these Jeeps, mud.
No, of course not.
There's not a speck of mud. I'm looking at them like, you got 35-inch Mickey Thompsons on that. You got these enormous Bilstein shocks. Things lifted up 6 inches. You've got these aggressive hood scoops on the front. You've got a snorkel. You've got all this. And it's immaculate.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's not even a dead bug on the windshield. Meanwhile, I routinely have to chisel a space out of my RAV4 to see. Like, oh, man.
So there's a very affluent part of London called Chelsea, which is, you know, where the sort of the people that have ridiculous amounts of money.
This is not where, hold on, wait a minute, let me get this right. Chavs live. Right,
right, right. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, no, not a single chav there. And, so they all drive Range Rovers or Land Rovers, and so in England the most off roading they're going to do is to mount the curb so that they can post a letter in the letterbox without. without getting out the car,
without actually getting out,
and we call them Chelsea tractors, exactly what you've just got.
Oh, that's awesome, Chelsea tractors. I love it.
A serious car motorhead question: in those areas, are you seeing an influx of the ridiculous high end Mercedes, like the G Wagon? The enormous, like almost military grade. I've seen a handful of them here. Northern Virginia is very, very similar. There's a lot of people with way more money than brains. Let's put it that way. And I see them popping up. Like, it seems to be the latest status symbol, because not too many people have them. If you look up the, I think it's the G-Wagon, but it's the really big Mercedes SUV. It looks like there should be like a SWAT team of German commandos popping out of the back.
You do see those. You also see a brand which I admit I've never seen it in America, so I don't know if what I'm about to say makes sense, but it's called a Hilux. Hilux.
Yeah, that's a Toyota, isn't it?
Yes, a Toyota.
I hear Hilux and I think that's what the hell is it called? The specials are in like Afghanistan. That's what you see it like driving around.
The technicals?
Technicals, thank you.
Slap a 50 cal on the back of a pickup truck.
Right, of this little tiny Toyota. And I'm like, every time you open that up, doesn't it like peel the roof back?
No. So gosh. I tell you, if I can give you a mental point of reference, which you'll either get or you won't. There was a episode of Top Gear where they drove to the North Pole.
Wow.
Yes. And they drove in a Hilux, and it was the car is massive. It's got, it's a proper Chelsea tractor.
Because wasn't that the same vehicle that they like, they collapsed a building on it to try to get it to stop running?
That's right. Yes.
I vaguely remember that. Like, they literally like had to end the world to get one to stop running.
Right. Yes. It's huge. It is. You know, and obviously in Chelsea, because they have
sinking it in the ocean and yes, dropping it on the top of a skyscraper.
It's the I have this large car. Clearly, it's going to cost me, stupid amounts of money at the petrol station every time. I go to fill it up. You know, ipso facto, I have this wealth.
Yes.
That is
one thing that is universal, I think.
Yes.
Now, okay, I'm curious. It would seem to me that, like, the single most ridiculous display of wealth would be to have, like, a Chevy Suburban in Chelsea, because very few people would have them, because you have to know someone and get it imported, and they're just enormous. The Texas Cadillac, right, Alan? Everybody's got a Suburban. It seats 9. You can carry luggage for everyone.
Not so much anymore.
No, I remember back in the 90s.
Yeah,
they were
really popular, but they've kind of died off. People don't go for those much anymore.
Oh, now it's the F-950, right?
Yeah,
it's
the
78-foot tall pickup truck.
No, they do a lot of Ford still sells a lot of Expeditions, which is like a little bit smaller. Lots of super cab pickup, four-door pickups. Those have kind of replaced the Suburban for the most part.
Yeah, I still can't believe they killed the Excursion. I mean, it seemed like the most American thing ever. We've got a gigantic 3/4-ton SUV that seats 9. It can tow a small house, and it gets about 4 miles per gallon. In a 5,000-gallon gas tank.
You know the thing that I saw recently and people were making fun of it? I think you were making fun of it, Jay.
But probably.
I admit that I kind of liked it. Was that the sedan built on like the Tacoma frame? I think it was a Tacoma chassis. Did you see that?
I don't think so. I don't think I would have made fun of that.
It's a sedan with a huge, like the 70s road boat sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
But it's built on a pickup truck chassis. So it's a body on frame.
Right.
A car as opposed to the way they do them now.
Right. They've done that for years. I mean, you'd see, Camaros on like a Chevy Blazer frame.
Yeah, but this is, I wish I could find it.
Is this like a factory thing?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know that I'd make fun of it. I mean, there's some that, like, when you've got like a 57 Chevy Bel Air and it's on a lifted, it hurts.
This was like a custom frame. It wasn't like somebody took a, what's the cop car that they made that was the huge sedan?
Crown Vic?
Yeah, it's not like they took a Crown Vic and put it on there. It was a custom body.
Gotcha. I wish I could find it now. It's
pissing me off.
The big thing to do with the Crown Vic is to put like 29-inch rims on it. And it drives around looking like it's like trying to avoid – it's like a woman in heels trying to go through a puddle without getting wet. They're kind of like dainty tiptoeing. And you get these cars that, like, they were never meant to have wheels that big.
Yeah.
And now we've totally bored poor Hayden car subculture nonsense.
Well, I'm only going to add fuel to the fire because I saw a couple of weeks ago a movie called National Lampoon's Great Vacation.
And
not the Christmas they went to something called Wally World.
The original
one of Jay's favorite movies.
Okay. Yes, Family Truckster.
Family trucks. Now, did my eyes deceive me, or did the car have a plank of wood down the side of it?
Oh yes. Oh my God! It's funny that you mentioned that, Hayden, because I saw today on my ride home from work, I saw a Toyota Scion B with fake wood grain paneling.
Is that coming back in style? Please tell me it's not coming back.
It has to be. They haven't been real wood since probably the 80s. I think the Chrysler LeBaron was probably the last.
I'm not even sure that was.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was that. I think to get real wood, you have to go back to like the 50s.
Yeah, because my parents had a 1970 Chrysler station wagon, Town and Country, that had the fake wood on the side.
Yeah, it's plastic.
Yeah.
It went real wood in like the 40s and 50s to plastic in the 70s and 80s. And then I think it was pretty much just decals in the 90s. And oh, you know what? 2000s, because the PT Cruiser, which my son has one of, his does not have wood grain paneling. But you could get the PT Cruiser with the fake wood paneling. Like, it's like a vinyl applique. It's not a It doesn't actually, it's not three dimensional. It just looks like wood. Then that's what the Toyota Scion was. It was just like a wrap. But I was just, I went by and I was like, my God, that's wood grain. Or is that making a comeback? Because it was.
Dear God, please no.
You know what? You know what's next, Alan? Vinyl roofs. Do you remember?
No, those
remember
were those? Awful.
The Landau. Oh, Continental God. Kits. The fake spare tire on the back.
Awful.
Just, the 1970s were just, I mean, this cornucopia of awful.
Well, there's a soft spot in my heart for the early 70s. Because you still had the convertible Eldorado Cadillac and, there was still some hope in the early 70s.
Yeah, the end of the muscle car era, absolutely.
But the late 70s and going into the 80s was just, it was like a desert wasteland. It was, it was so awful. It was beyond awful. Cars were terrible. Oh, remember the Chrysler K car? Remember all those awful cars?
The K car saved Chrysler Motor Corporation.
Yeah, I know, but they were
Lee Iacocca's brainchild. Cars. They were fantastically awful cars, but they were inexpensive.
Yeah.
And you could buy one and it was perfectly adequate. It had a tiny little 2.2 liter motor. It was easy to work on because there was nothing to it. And you had to work on it because it broke down all the time.
Tiny little 2.2.
Yes.
But you got to remember that K cars were considered small at the time, but they would be considered large today.
Oh, yeah. You have to understand, when my wife and I started dating, her family had not one, but two Plymouth Reliance. Ooh. They had a newer one and an older one. And when they got the newer one, they drove it across country, and it broke down in the first 5,000 miles. That's how bad these cars were. Yeah. Brand new, it broke down. And they made a zillion of them. They put that engine in, like, literally the entire line. You had everything from the little four-door hatchback Dodge Omni all the way up to the Caravan, the minivan, had that same 2.2 liter engine in it. And then if you remember correctly, in the later part of the 80s, they turbocharged all of them. Every single one of them had a turbocharger in it. To the point of the Reliant wagon had a turbocharged engine. And so did the minivan. And it was surreal thing ever, because you would have turbo badges and turbo rims on a station wagon. Crappy.
I found the sedan I was thinking of.
you did?
Yeah.
Does it have paneling?
It is a sedan body on a Ram pickup frame.
Now, why would I hate that? I love the Ram.
I think the car looks awesome. I think it looks great. It looks like a big ass sedan. I miss big sedans.
Is it the 6000 SUX? That's the question.
9000, yes. Yeah.
It is not, but I will definitely put a link to it in the show page. I put a link in the Skype. Y'all can look at it if you want. The Asnum Atalux. A $300,000 bespoke luxury sedan built by an Italian custom shop, Asnum Automotive, based on a Ram 1500 pickup. Road and Track? The guy writing it on it for Road and Track doesn't like it, but I'm kind of digging it. It's, you know.
I just had a mental image of two cultures colliding by taking a mini Cooper and putting wood paneling on the side.
Oh, I would be shocked if somebody hadn't done that already. I bet somebody's done it.
All right. So basically, they cut the back end of a Dodge Durango and grafted it onto the back of a mega cab Ram. I mean, it's kind of neat. They basically made a Ram Charger. It's a modern day Ram Charger because that was the SUV back in the 80s.
Right.
I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's interesting. But yeah, they just cut the back end of a Durango off and then filled in the rest.
Put a trunk in our back window.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they want $300,000 for it. I mean, hey, good for you. Monza spelled backwards. I mean, that's all they did.
Yeah.
That's their name. It's Monza backwards.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the prettiest thing in the world, but it has possibilities. I mean, you could see the reason they won't ever do something like that in the U.S. is because the only reason trucks and Hayden as an immigrant, you might not understand this. Actually, you probably do.
I'm damned with faint praise.
It's actually common knowledge. I'm not telling any secrets here. But the reason trucks are so popular in the U.S. is because they are not part of the mileage standards.
The CAFE standards.
So all cars, all sedans, anything that can be called a car has to meet fleet standards, mile per gallon standards.
Fuel economy.
Right. So they're very limited on what they can do for cars. The worst thing from a car manufacturer, from like GM and Ford's point of view, the worst thing they could possibly do is build a huge sedan and then have it be popular as hell, because that would blow them out of the water on their economy, fuel economy. Well, but trucks don't count. So what they're, that's why everybody, I mean, hell, that's one of the big reasons I drive a truck, is because it's the only way you can get a huge vehicle with lots of seating, lots of room to sit. I mean, the back seat of my truck is gigantic. You could play racquetball in the back of my truck, literally. And it's gigantic. And that's the only way you can get something like that nowadays is by calling it a truck. So if they built something like this thing, they couldn't call it a truck. They couldn't call it an SUV, really. It's a sedan. So they'd have to call it a car, and then, oh, shit.
That would actually be a truck, because it's built on a truck frame.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It'd be a hard...
And it's clearly a Dodge pickup. If you remember correctly, SUVs... I mean, we've had SUVs. The Chevrolet Suburban rolled off the assembly line in 1934.
Right.
Every time I see some greeny tree hugger whining about, SUVs are doing this, SUVs are new, SUVs are doing this. Like, no, we've had SUVs since the 30s. They became super popular after World War II because of the Jeep. GP, general purpose, became Jeep.
Right.
It was a go-anywhere utility vehicle. The El Camino / Ranchero were huge in the 50s. The car truck hybrid.
Yeah, I hated those.
Oh, they're awful. They're awful. I would love one. Don't get me wrong. But the SUV, I mean, you figure the Jeep Cherokee has been around since 70s.
Oh, yeah.
The Japanese, the Toyota, Forerunner, the Nissan Pathfinder, all early 1980s. Yet people the Ford Explorer hit the scene in 90, I believe.
Something like that.
And by midnight, 1995, it was the only vehicle on the road. They were all Ford Explorers. And the hue and cry was that these were new. And it was the implication was that the SUV was some sort of nefarious way to get around safety standards. And do you remember the big hue and cry they were more dangerous because if you got into an accident, the other people could be harmed. I'm that's the whole point, you nitwit. You've made cars smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
you used to be able to get a full-size car or a full-size station wagon that was at least the size of a city block. It weighed as much as a fully laden naval battle cruiser and could seat 85 people for dinner.
That station wagon my parents had, it was a 1970 Chrysler station wagon. Not reliable at all.
You could land a helicopter on the roof, though.
It had a 440 cubic inch V8 engine. The speedometer went to 120. It sat at least 10 people comfortably. You know, it was a beast. And you know, it was what, 21 feet long. I mean, it was ridiculous. It barely fit in the garage.
Yeah, I rode with a guy in high school that had a mid-70s Ford LTD. We got 8 people in the car with like plenty of room. We could have had dinner.
Yeah. And this station wagon was like, it got like 11 miles to the gallon, maybe. And with a zero to 60 in like 2.5 minutes and with the 440 V8.
Yes. Know. Yeah. Imagine that with a straight six. Yeah,
because the car weighed like 2 tons.
Sounds like a Chelsea tractor.
Yeah, it did. Okay, so all right, so we're almost out of time. There's something we still have to talk about.
Please.
The royal wedding. I need an explanation, Hayden.
Right.
The lapels. I mean, seriously, the lapels. How many lapels does a man need on his coat?
Well, so the lapels are the royal family equivalency of willy waving.
Is there a significance to the lapels? Do they mean something?
Typically, I mean, rank and stature. But
I don't recall ever seeing something like that before. Like the lapels. And also, okay, you just have to bear with me, Hayden, because it seems to me that a lot of these people are cosplaying. Because I found an article talking about what the bridegroom and the best man wore.
Right, yes.
Prince William has chosen to wear the uniform of a colonel of the Irish Guards on his wedding day. Prince Harry will wear the uniform of a captain of the household cavalry. Now, it's like they're like picking their outfits for the cosplay. Oh, I'm going to go as a colonel of the Irish Guards. What are you going to go as?
Alan, it's a bit, no, it's not actually. I'm not trying to, but it's not. It's because they fought. Harry was actually did two tours in Afghanistan.
Oh, I know he did. I know he did.
Oh, okay.
There's no question about that. And I know Prince William also was. And I don't know I don't think he was as active as Harry was. I mean, Harry's kind of a badass. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, he's a helicopter pilot and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's, you know, but it just the way they wrote about it. It's like they were getting ready for Comic-Con or something. And then the lapels.
Did you think the 1970s were making a comeback, Alan?
Dude, did you not see the lapels? Have you not seen a picture?
I did not. I did not pay any attention at all.
Okay.
I believe the term the kids use is zero fucks were given.
I mean, yes, it is. I mean, obviously, it is cosplay. You're right, Alan. I'm not gonna take that away from you.
Oh, you can take it away. I don't care.
No, I'm
prove me wrong.
Change my mind.
That's it. That's right.
No. On this occasion, I'm not. I'm not gonna take it away from you because it is. You know, you're right. It's, you know, that. I'm sure, you know, day to day they dream of being able to wear a pair of Levi jeans and, you know, and a comfortable, you know, you know, it, it's, you know, it's, I don't know. Sometimes if, you know, if it's cosplay, is it cosplay? They're doing it for the cheap seats. They're doing it for, you know, the admiration of the population of England. Yes, actually there probably are. So yes, it is cosplay, but, if that's the real reason, you know, it's not for their ego, but it's actually for the people of England and the people in America watching it on the television to ooh and ah.
Oh yeah, over. There was a lot of that.
Then yes, it is cosplay. You're right. And that's what it probably is, you know. I mean, my joke about willy waving is there's probably, you know, 10% truth in that, but it's probably, you know, 90% of, you know, for the oohs and the ahs and the benefits of the crowd.
Well, it was quite crowd pleasing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And probably, I got to tell you more, there are probably in raw numbers, probably more people watching it here in the U.S. than were watching it in England. Just because our population's bigger. You know?
Yeah.
But there's, yeah. You know.
Now, that's an interesting question of a percentage of the population as a whole. I wonder if, I almost wonder if there was a greater percentage of Americans watching.
I don't know if they were watching live, because I did hear somebody complaining that they were pissed off because they couldn't, you know, they were complaining that they didn't schedule the royal wedding during a time when they could watch it, you know.
Like Who gets married at 5 a.m?
Yeah, exactly. That was the big complaint. It's like, no, you idiot, they're on the other side of the world. Come on.
Okay. Non sequitur. Segue for 1 second. The other side of the world. Someone posted that the Concord used to travel to Caracas, Venezuela.
What? No, it didn't.
No.
Did it?
There was a Paris to Caracas flight.
Oh, well, there you go. Not anymore.
Just, you know.
That's back before Venezuela was commie.
Exactly. And, you know, it was along the lines of look at how far they've fallen. That this was a Concorde landing at Caracas, Venezuela in 1976.
All right. There you go.
Just the whole, you know, look, instant cesspool, just add socialism. Sorry, around the world just made me think of that.
Yeah.
Just little odd snippet that, again, socialism just hasn't been tried.
Yeah, I also wonder if, you know, what's his name? Harry, I'm going to be like very American and call him Harry and Meghan.
Like
people down at the pub, right? Meg.
Harry and Meg.
Harry and Meg. I know him. Yeah. Besties. Yeah.
Harry and Mags.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you go from the audaciousness of Charles marrying a commoner.
Yeah.
Which was apparently scandalous at the time. Mm-hmm. To Harry marrying a divorced American actress. And everybody's like, woohoo!
Well, hey, I think there's the healthcare. Holy smokes. Okay, I just saw the picture you posted with the lapels.
I broke Jay.
it's like an elaborate.
I don't know what jacket. It is. It's bizarre.
Giant cloth dildos, you know, hanging off your shirt.
I actually went out of my way and went back and looked at previous royal weddings, and nobody has ever worn anything like that.
It was kind of like, you know, he's well-liked. He's a badass. He's a good-looking guy. Let's put him in the most ridiculous thing we could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm wondering if the reason that they let Harry get away with marrying the American actress is because he now that William is, you know, has children of his own, Harry is safely.
He's so far of the line that it
exactly
just
it almost doesn't matter anymore.
It's like, you know what, it really, you know, if we're debating Harry taking over, it's like literally the Martians are vaporizing people. You know, they're just running around going ack and zapping people at this point. That's the point at which we're worried about Harry taking over.
Yeah.
Yes.
Could be. Plus the whole thing. I mean, I don't know. Harry's really popular.
I mean, seems to me he could whip that island back in shape.
He may be more popular than any other member of the royal family right now.
Yes. I think he could be. I know I have a bit of a social and so maybe anthropological observation is that the popularity of the royal wedding, I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the popularity of the Hallmark Channel in America.
Well, American women love themselves some royalty. I got it. You know, that's the whole now, princess thing. And
yeah, I was just going to say, is that Disney at work? The whole princess. Everyone's a princess.
Yes. Then you're on. I think you're onto something there, Jay.
That's kind of the fantasy. Whole.
And now that you know, an American.
Yeah. You know, oh my gosh. Yeah.
I say divorce like it matters, but you know, for when you're talking about a royal wedding, it kind of does matter. But the fact that a divorced American actress can marry a prince and who's not necessarily first, you know, in line to be the king, but you know, he could be. He's certainly in the top 10. So that's like every, and I'm going to be horribly sexist, but every fat, stupid woman in a trailer park is suddenly thinking of, oh yeah, I have a chance.
Yes.
So would that make her a dependipotamus?
Yes, it does, actually.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to hell. So
she's the biggest dependipotamus.
I've just learned a new word.
Oh, really? Dependipotamus?
Yes.
In all kinds of bad things.
Yeah, dependipotamus is one of those women that hang out around military bases trying to entrap young soldiers who are thinking more with their little head instead of their big head because the government's benefits are extremely nice for a certain sector of the population. Yeah. So they're marrying for the benefits and the fact that the guy's going to be in another country for, you know, a large part of a year.
Time. Yes.
And then they're free to do whatever they want and, you know, cash that check. The classic base hypothesis.
Yes. My son is considering joining the Navy. So this is like part of my world now.
Yeah. Well, there you go. They actually counsel soldiers on these things now.
I'm thinking counsel. Hell, I got scissors, man. Yeah, sorry, dude.
So,
anywho, we're way over.
We are.
It's okay. It's been a great episode. Hayden, you are a fantastic guest. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
It is just wonderful. I love the perspective you bring. I love that the whole, you're like one leg in each world. You know, you bring the English perspective and you've also escaped. You know, you've come to America America and embraced. I mean, you own an AR-15. I mean, that's just that alone. You're pretty much, you can't ever go back, and they have to like X-ray you, don't they? Like to make sure you're not smuggling little baby AR-15s in.
He's on a list now, and every time he goes back home, they like pull him aside to the special little room and for enhanced interrogation.
I think they might. I think they might start.
You're on a list now, buddy.
Uh-oh.
Don't worry. We're all on lists.
Yes, we're all on lists.
Welcome to the 21st we're gonna century.
We're all going to be driving Alan's Monza marmalade, or what is it? The ex-topalapa kettle? Monza topalapa kettle. I do have to admit, going back to this, I've owned 3 Dodge Rams.
All right.
The word luxury has never entered into my description of any of them, ever, for any reason at all.
I don't know. They make a pretty high end Dodge Ram truck now.
Oh, they're awesome, but they're not luxury. They're still trucks, and they still drive like trucks. And I cannot imagine how you can make a 3-ton beast like luxurious. And I mean, yeah, you can get soft leather and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, it's still a truck. Every time you hit a bump, it's going to jounce like a truck.
I bet they fix that suspension.
By suspending it via cables from a crane? Or?
I don't know. My truck's not that bad. My truck drives more like a car than a truck.
The Toyota Tundra is the most amazing truck I've ever driven. And I had a Ram. I had the very previous generation to the one that this car is based off of. Comfortable? Not comfortable. It was a comfortable truck. But the ride was very, very decidedly truck-like. Nobody was ever going to confuse this with a passenger automobile. This was very clearly in the truck camp, never going to leave the truck camp. And it was happy. It didn't try to pretend to be anything. I can't imagine. I mean, they've got to put a not inconsequential amount of work into making this thing ride like a car. Which I guess if they did, power to them. That's awesome. I think that is wonderful. This right here is America, damn it. This is, we saw a need, we filled a need, and we're going to make money on it. I love that. Yeah. God bless you, sir. You are the SpaceX of custom pickup truck car hybrid monsters.
The inside looks absolutely awful.
It is only a matter of time before someone from Texas buys this vehicle, jacks it up 18 inches, and puts 48 inches on it, and drives it around.
And slaps some Longhorn horns on the front.
Yes, yes. Now, where did you see interior pictures?
Oh, there's a link.
I have a question.
Yes.
I know we're trying to maybe wrap things up. And
It's okay.
Do you think that America will embrace the electric car?
There's a lot of work that needs to be done for the electric car. I would love to see electric cars become more popular. Electric motors are inherently better than gas motors.
Yes, they are.
You look at like the Tesla is faster than pretty much anything out there because you have all of that torque available instantly. It doesn't have to spool up like a gasoline motor. It bam, it's right there. They do the Tesla Roadster does 0 to 60 in like motorcycle superbike speeds, like 2.8 seconds.
And then it catches on fire and blows
up. Well, yes, it burns down, falls over, and then sank into the swamp.
Right.
But the problem we have is there are several problems with the electric car as they currently stand. We don't have the infrastructure for rapid recharging. That's huge because it takes 8 hours in a standard plug.
Right.
To bring these back. And if you're doing like, okay, I live in Virginia. I visit family in Massachusetts 2 to 3 times a year. It's a 500-mile drive. If I've got an electric car with a 100-mile range, I have to stop 4 to 5 times to charge it. That's that you will never make that feasible.
And then you got the white knuckle effect too, because the other problem with electric cars is when you're looking at range, you don't, you know, you get, you know, you're, it, it says you've got, oh, you've got 50 miles to go. And then 10 minutes later, it's like, whoops, you're down to 10. You better, you know, and then you stop.
Yep. How many times has your cell phone been like, oh, I've got 70% battery.
Right.
Oh, I've got 30% battery. Holy crap. 10. What the hell?
Right.
All right. I had a rechargeable battery lawnmower, Hayden. I bought it when we moved into our house in Virginia. It had a very small yard. I loved it. It was wonderful. There was no gasoline. There was no oil. It was an electric engine. It was wonderful. The problem is, when I bought it, I have a tiny lawn. It's I think, a fifth of an acre. It's just enough. We can have a party, people out in the backyard. It's wonderful. But I can mow it in an hour, complete with emptying like the bag that the grass is collected in. When I bought the lawnmower, we moved into the house, I could mow my entire lawn on one charge with room left over.
Right.
4 years later, I had to recharge. I could only mow the front lawn, plug it in overnight, charge it up, and then do the back lawn. 4 years. Mm. That's the problem with batteries, is the current state of battery technology is such that that's going to happen.
Yes.
And then the purely electric vehicles and again, the fact that the Chevy Volt costs $50,000 and is subsidized insanely is offensive. Just generally offensive that a little shitty General Motors sedan, you can buy a Malibu for $15,000 or the Volt for $50,000. It's insane.
Yes.
And again, at the end of the day, the oh so smug environmentalists get into their electric cars, which you charge it from your home electricity, which is coming from one of two sources, either coal or nuke power.
Yes.
So you, Mr. I'm so great for the environment, you've either got West Virginia coal miners or you've got Eastern Seaboard nuclear power plants. Congratulations.
I mean,
it's either Chernobyl or coal.
I can see there's a certain market for electric cars with people that just want to use it to commute. You know, it doesn't matter if your car only has a 200-mile range when you commute 40 miles a day.
Right. That's my commute. I would love if they could come out with a $15,000 electric car with a 200-mile radius, I would very seriously consider one.
That'd be pretty nice.
For example, the smart car. You take that concept, put an electric motor with a 200-mile radius. That way I can get 2 days. I can drive it for 2 days, and then, plug it in.
And then figure out how to make air conditioning work too, because you got to have that.
Down here, yeah. I actually don't.
You're so funny down here. you mean up there.
Compared to Massachusetts, it's down here.
Oh, that's the other thing is cold weather.
That was another thing I was going to get into.
Yep.
It's wonderful in very moderate climates. England is a perfect example because you don't have – generally, as a general rule, Hayden, please jump in and tell me I'm full of crap if I am. But you generally don't have bitter, bitter cold winters or extremely hot, muggy summers. Is that fair? Investment?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So you don't need an electric motor or specifically a battery that can withstand for example, a New England winter where you might see weeks of I'm trying to do the conversion and I'm failing miserably. Sub-zero, which for you would sub-zero.
It could literally be sub-zero for Celsius.
Sub-zero
Celsius.
Like sub-zero would be like minus 20 Celsius. And if I'm doing the conversion, I'm trying to do math on the fly after a giant glass.
It's still sub-zero.
Yeah. Below
very
yeah.
cold to summers of 40 plus C.
Yes.
We will routinely see 90 degree Fahrenheit, which I think is about 40, if I'm not mistaken. 40.
No, yes, it's about 40.
I'm doing rough equilibration. I know your 98.6 is 37. So yeah, I guess maybe 35, not quite 40, but
yeah,
room temperature is 22. I know a few.
We get anyway, 40 down here.
Yes, yes, and Florida. Same with Florida. You know, yep. Florida, you'll see, you know, upper 30s to low 40 Celsius temperatures with high humidity.
And heat same and cold is bad for batteries. So
right,
yeah. Right. Because I the reason I ask is I'm seeing lots of little electric cars and there's charging stations all over the place. It's really becoming, you know, I see them quite a bit. And I was thinking,
with $27 a gallon gas, I don't see, you know, yeah, you can see why.
Right. Yes. You see why. Exactly. And I think everything that you've both said is absolutely, absolutely correct. Is that, the battery technology is not necessarily there for the American climate and the American psyche and the American country as a distance. If you have 90 million Americans buying electric cars, I mean, lithium is a rare earth element. It's, you know, there's not a huge amount of it. And the tree huggers and the bunny squeezers, you know, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. But you take the Toyota Prius, and the lithium is mined from a strip mine in China, which is not, you know, a strip mine is nothing, not, you know, Gaia loving type of mining in any way whatsoever. It's then put on a plane to Norway, where the batteries are assembled. The assembled batteries are then sent to Tokyo to be built, put into the cars, and then they send the Toyota car to the showroom in England to be sold. And a Toyota Prius has done 6,000 miles before the wheels have rotated a single inch.
Yep. Now, here's another thought I have. More people turning to electric cars. What's that going to do for our electric distribution infrastructure and the price in general of electricity?
Well, it'll go up.
Exactly. Well,
people live in this, liberals especially, live in this bizarre world where if you change a variable, it doesn't have an effect on anything else. They go and, oh, yes, we'll just raise taxes, as if people won't adjust what they do.
Right.
You know, in light of that. Well, and they do the whole, you know, oh, electricity's, you know, cheaper or whatever, you know, or you charge it at night when it's less expensive. Well, guess what happens if, like Hayden says, if 90 million people go to an electric car and start charging it at night? Yeah. What do you think the electrical utilities will do? Because all of a sudden they're going to have to be running their peak generators at night now instead of, you know, in the afternoon like they do already.
Alan, what happens in Houston in July and August when everybody's running their air conditioner 24/7?
They fire up the peaking plants.
And if they don't gauge it exactly right, you get rolling brownouts. And
yeah, they don't do that much down here. We're not California. They have lots of peaking plants all over the place. You see them; they're little gas fired plants that feed the grid. So it's. I've been down here 9 years and we had a brownout in the whole time I've been here. But California has a huge problem
there are places
because
they
won't let them build the plants that they need to do that.
New England
has a similar problem.
New England will see that because we typically don't get the super hot summers. Right. If we get a summer that's exceptionally hot, more people run out and buy air conditioners. More people go down into the basement. They grab the air conditioner. They throw it in the window. They start cranking them up. Yep. And then sure enough, you have rolling brownouts because all of a sudden you've got this super increased demand.
Yep.
Now, instead of an air conditioner,
throw
a car on that mix. Throw a whole bunch of people throwing cars. If all we do for electric cars is start producing more of them, without giving a thought to the electricity distribution infrastructure, how we generate electricity. If you really want electric cars to take off, build more nuke plants.
That's right.
And liberals' heads will explode.
But that's what's going to have to happen. If you want to have a significant switch from gasoline powered vehicles to electric vehicles, and I'm not opposed to that. I think in general that's a good idea if you can build the infrastructure to support it. But the only way to do that is with nuclear plants. There is no possible way. So there's another way to do it is to build some big ass coal plants.
Yes,
we have lots of coal to burn. Guess how likely that is to happen.
Right. So, right. When we've got a major presidential candidate for one of the two political parties gleefully exclaiming you're going to shut down all coal production. Right. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. You shut down coal, there's only one left. As much as the greenies would love to point to solar and wind and even water to an extent. You know, it's like there's only so many rivers that we can put hydroelectric plants on. It's not as renewable as.
Well, none of them at the EPA had their way.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, like wind is ridiculous. Solar is utterly ridiculous. My favorite is, you know, the whole, this is a free resource. Really?
Yeah. How much did that panel cost?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, remember that during the, you know, Obama administration, the Solyndra administration, they actually put tariffs on Chinese solar panels because they were too cheap and people were buying too many of them.
Yep.
So when you think, they were good for the environment. No, they were good for their cronies.
Also, the other thing I laugh about are the people that put solar panels on their house and they go, oh yeah, it's, you know, they're good for 30 years. And I'm like, yeah. And how many times are you going to go up there and clean them?
Or it must be nice to live in an area that doesn't ever get hail.
Right. Because what happens to a solar panel after it's been on your roof for a year and it's had bird crap and pollen and dirt and everything? Guess what the electrical output is going to
be?
You're going to have to be going up there several times a year to clean the damn thing.
You have to power wash them.
It's ridiculous. And wind is just as bad. I mean, you know, there's people make this mistake where isolated they extrapolate isolated things into ridiculousness. So a solar panel powering a little light or a little camera out in the middle of nowhere makes perfect sense.
Yes. Yes.
A wind generator powering a little battery or somewhere, like, you know, a lot of sailboats use them and they work great because sailboats, you know, the wind's blowing, right? And those little isolated cases are great. But when you try to scale up.
Right.
It doesn't work.
I'm trying to do the conversion, but, you know,
your fault, Hayden.
6-inch panel power your cell phone for a day, then a 6 million-inch fan could power an entire city for a day.
Yeah.
You know, no.
Yeah.
No.
And to say nothing of the fact what it costs to both install and repair those windmills. Like, you don't realize it, but they are absolutely massive.
And they require constant maintenance.
Yep.
And they kill birds like crazy.
Oh, yeah, but that's a bonus. I mean, it's, you know, what you have to do is you have to put solar panels under the windmills. So the windmill chops the bird up, they hit the solar panel, and they're fried, and boom, you got a Chick-fil-A.
Oh man!
And so, on that note, folks.
We're half an hour over. So that was a great.
This is obviously the score thing. Report that's on metric time.
That's right.
We're at 1 kilo hour right now, so we're good.
My next stop is decimalizing music.
Good luck. Hey, again. Well, thanks so much for Hayden for joining
us. Yes, thank you.
We picked on your native land a little bit, but
it's all in good fun. Obviously, thank you for having me. It's always a great pleasure.
And please keep me posted on the cleaning of the AR. I'm very curious.
I'm more interested on the shooting of the AR. That's
well, yeah.
when you shoot your gun, we want to have you back on so you can talk about it.
Yes. Now, Breeder and I and another gentleman are from the group are trying to get that arranged.
Awesome.
And we are with enthusiasm we're trying to get that arranged.
Maybe you could do like a Facebook Live to the group or something.
Oh,
okay. There you go. Video.
Yeah.
Video. Yes.
All right. Well, everybody have a good weekend and we'll be back next week.
Goodbye. Good night.